Hi, everybody. Good evening. Welcome to Evoke Therapy Program's broadcast. Tonight's topic, inner child, was a topic that I wanted to talk about because of a recent bit of work that I did myself. It's one of the things that we encourage and talk about at the intensives that we run, the therapeutic retreats that we run in Park City, Utah at our lodge. But it's also something that I've done a lot of work on in my own life. And because I came fresh off of that and just watching and thinking about my peers, my clients over the years, and the challenge to kind of find that inner voice, find that story, that history, and all the things that get in the way of it, I felt really excited to share this idea with you. So let's get right into it. Let's first of all start off with what the construct is, what the idea is of an inner child. And I borrowed a couple of definitions. The first one says, in popular psychology and analytical psychology, inner child is an individual's childlike aspect. It includes what a person learned as a child before puberty. The inner child is often conceived as a semi-independent subpersonality, subordinate to the waking conscious mind. And more simply put, a person's supposed original or true self, especially when regarded as damaged or concealed by negative childhood experiences. I've talked about this for a long time, that maybe as important as the truth that we're seeking to find out about ourselves, about what we feel, about what's hurt us, and about how it's all affected us, how our life has affected us, as important as those truths are, I think it's just as interesting sometimes to understand why we don't know that truth. What gets in the way? What are the voices, the ghosts in our head that fill our mind up with doubt, with shoulds and shouldn'ts? I talk about this idea that if we can imagine an ideal circumstance, an ideal childhood where what we thought, what we felt, what our inner world was sought after and listened and recognized, if we had that experience consistently, and it's virtually impossible to have that consistently, but if we did, we would come to know ourselves well. And most important, we would know what we wanted at any given point in time. We would know our truth. I say it this way: if we were hungry, then we would eat. And if we were tired, then we would sleep. And if we wanted to go out, then we would go out. And we would just tell the truth about our inner experiences. But because that's not how we were raised, because that's not how we were fostered as children, we have all these doubts, all these voices in our head that confuse us. And so it's just as important to understand why we don't have access to it. And I want to say this at the outset, that a primary motivation for me sharing this tonight, like I said, part of it was I've recently done a piece of my own work at my own therapeutic intensive. But in addition, I'm more and more clear that the relationship we have with our inner child, with that long lost truth of what we felt and what our story was, that the capacity that we have or that we develop to be able to hear and nurture and listen and respond to that inner child will be directly correlated with our ability to do that with our own children or with others in our lives. In other words, how we regard our own inner child in many ways is how we will regard those same aspects in our children or in our partner or spouse for that matter. There's a direct parallel though there. So like a lot of things that I talk about in the context of parenting, if the idea of being a more effective, a better, a healthier parent is the motive for you, then let it motivate you to do your own work. Let it motivate you to go inward, to look at yourself and to heal what's inside of you. I wanted to start off with this story. I wrote a blog a couple of years ago called Feeling Small and Being Present. It's on my personal website, drbradreedy.com, and I've listed, for those of you watching here today, I've listed the URL. So you can go to my website if you're listening on the podcast and search, go to drbradreedy.com. Or you can, if you're watching on the broadcast, you can just look at the URL there. But and anyway, I've told this story once or twice, but I think it bears repeating in the context of thinking about our inner child. in late 2016, November of 2016, my publisher was the host of a radio show on XM Sirius Radio. And she said she was inviting all of her favorite guests for the year to come on our show and to talk about Thanksgiving and gratitude. And so the fact that she said that I was one of her favorite guests should have ideally would have landed, right? There would have been some belief on my part that I belonged there and that I deserved to be there and that she liked me. But I had no soil for that. There was no place to plant that seed. And so I couldn't really absorb the idea. So I planned for my appearance on the radio show. There was a party that we were going to have before. We were going to do the broadcast for a couple of hours, and then we were going to mingle afterwards. So as I approached this interview, it was going to happen in New York City. I read about gratitude. I talked to colleagues about gratitude. I asked friends and family about gratitude to kind of gather up the story. So something that I could impress people with. I was preparing to wow them with some fantastic insight. So the day of the show began, my wife went with me to the studio, and there were about 15 of us or so that showed up. And I was the only one, we were the only ones not from New York City. Everybody else was local. And so I was already feeling a little bit of out of place, a little bit intimidated, not feeling like I really belong. And throughout the day, in the pre-broadcast party, during the broadcast and afterwards, I was talking about myself. I was talking about how great I was. I was trying to impress people. I was trying to show them that I had something to add, some value, some worth that made me belong there. Because I didn't know it. I couldn't feel it. So I was trying to prove it to everybody. When it became my turn for the interview, there was a table of five microphones around my publisher, and she would ask questions one by one. And so when it was my turn to be interviewed, as my group of five, she asked me a question. And it didn't quite line up with what I had planned to impress her with. And so I tried to weave her question in, but really I just gave another answer. I really just used it as an opening to tell my story or my idea. And she tried to ask a follow-up question to try to get me to answer the question again. And I didn't answer it for a second time. When I went back and listened to the recording later, I realized how far off, how disconnected I was from her and the experience that I was having at the time. Afterwards, of course, she stopped talking to me after that. And afterwards, I was mingling with everybody. And then as we were leaving the building and said our goodbyes and we were walking down the hallway, my wife turned to me and she said, "What was that? That was a nightmare. You were a train wreck in there." And I couldn't argue with her. I knew it was true. She said, "You were interrupting people. You were talking about yourself. It was really odd what you were doing." And I could feel the shame, and I was cringing. Those characteristics that she was describing of me accurately were things I despise in myself and in other people, right? Self-centered, narcissistic, bragging, talking about themselves, interrupting, not connecting. All of those things are absolutely contrary to any of my conscious values. I went back home. A couple days later, I'm in therapy with my therapist. I'm telling her this story that I'm telling you right now. And I'm feeling that same feeling, that smallness I wanted to hide and disappear. I ended my telling of the story saying, I just hate that part of me. I don't want that part of me to show up in situations where I'm feeling afraid and insecure. And she said, "And instead of hating that part of yourself, why don't you lean into it? Why don't you write about it? Why don't you write a blog about it?" She said, "I'm sure other people will be able to relate to it if you write about it." So I did. It was the first time in my life when I clearly had the idea to lean into the shame, to poke my head beneath that veil of shame and feeling of a repulsion, and to kind of discover what was beneath it. And as I wrote about it, I was able to articulate the feelings that I've shared with you today about feeling small, insecure, of no value. And I was able to name that. And I was able to identify how the way that I showed up was my defended way of trying to protect that scared, insecure, small, out of place little boy inside of me. And it didn't fix the problem completely, but I will tell you, since that day, since that blog, I'm more able to hear that little child when he's feeling scared. To hear that little boy who didn't feel like he belonged when he was a child and tried to impress people, his parents, the adults around him with jokes, with something smart or witty or clever. I can see that little boy and I can attend to him and I can sit with him quietly and calm him down. I can repeat a mantra in my mind to that little boy saying, "You're okay. It's going to be okay. I'm here and I'm listening." See, here's the issue. Most of us look at our mental health issues, our mental illnesses, if you will, our defenses, our symptoms. Most of us look at them with disdain. We look at them in ourselves with disdain because they frighten us and upset us. We look at other people's mental illness, symptoms, and defenses with disdain. There's some part of us that believes that that's the way you cure it, is you hate on it. Hate the symptom, hate the sin, if you will. That's what most of us believe and we're taught. And it terrifies us to think about our symptoms in kind ways, to explore, even be grateful for our symptoms and how they've protected us in our lives. Because if we're kind to them, if we don't hate them, if we just understand them, they're afraid that they will take over. We're afraid that they will take over. We're afraid that without that, the shame and the guilt, that there'll be nothing to correct us, no guardrails, and that we will become completely indulgent in our mental illness, our symptoms, our defenses. So it makes sense. That's why we do it. That's what we were taught. Our parents got upset with us. Teachers, other authority figures got upset with us when we were doing something quote unquote wrong. And we learned as children that something was wrong with us, that part of us, even the part that was beneath that was being expressed through the symptomology, was wrong. And it's just not true. It's a lie. And we find it so difficult to be compassionate towards ourselves in those moments and towards our children and towards others in those moments. I've had people ask me about my work over the years, many different people. I remember one conversation where somebody said to me, "Aren't some of the parents you work with just jerks?" And I said, I really don't have the luxury to think in those terms. I would be of no help or value to them whatsoever. I don't have that inclination. Yes, people do things that are harmful. Yes, people are wounded, children, parents, everybody. But I can't afford to think of people as jerks. I have to look at them through the lens of a therapist, through therapist's eyes, and simply see that whatever they're doing, however it hurts people, however it impacts the world, that beneath that is some scared, injured, vulnerable child. And if I can connect to that, if I can draw that out in my client, we can work together to heal it. But if I just respond in anger, disappointment, and judgment, then I'm going to reinforce the defense. So our inner child is what some psychologists would call our authentic, our real, or our true self. It's the purest part of ourself, the part of ourself that is beneath, behind all the shoulds and shouldn'ts, behind all the ways that we were taught how to be in the world. It's your truth. I talk about this idea of your truth. It's your story. It's the story of your life. Give a voice to your feelings and experiences before you were taught what you should think and what you should feel, right? That's what the inner child is. It's that voice inside of yourself before somebody told you how to be. It's a combination of your organicity, meaning your brain, your temperament, your genetics. It's a combination of that and the experience that we have in our context. And so many times in psychology and therapy, everybody's looking for, is it nature or is it nurture? And it's a silly question because it suggests that one is the complete answer. And in all cases, there's some combination of both, right? In every in every way that we show up in the world, there's some part of that that comes from how we were made and what we experienced in the world. And we lose contact with this voice. We lose contact with it because of our context, because of, like I said, the messages that we were told, the emotional climate. A lot of it wasn't verbalized. It was just how people felt and reacted to us. As children, we all have the ability, well, most of us have the ability. There is, of course, a learning difference that prevents it, the autism spectrum disorder, folks. But for the most of us, we read other people's facial expressions, even. And it's not that we just read their facial expressions and conclude what they're feeling and thinking. We actually make meaning about ourselves. The frustrated or exasperated look on a mother's face to an infant reflects back to him or to her, the infant, that something is wrong with them, that something is upsetting and unacceptable, and therefore the baby begins to internalize that is something's wrong with me. I am bad in some way. Just this last week, I was talking with somebody about this idea that we talk about children being good children. In infancy, newborns. And we don't really have a lot of other words for it, or phrases or terms for it. But when we say good, really what we mean is a child who has very little need. A child who is happy and not upset, not colicky, not in pain, not uncomfortable, that is quiet and self-sufficient. That, from the earliest stage of life, is the message that we're thinking about when somebody has needs or not. If they have needs, they're bad because their needs are overwhelming to us and we can't always meet those needs. And so instead of dealing with and owning that feeling in ourselves as parents and adults, we make the child bad. And we use our emotional energy to get them to shrink back in to the bandwidth that we have. And most of that is not visible to the naked eye. It's only through a lot of therapy and a lot of explorations that it becomes apparent. I've said this before, but my therapist would say things to me. I've been seeing her for 20 years now this year. My therapist would say things to me in the early days, and even about my mother and father specifically, who I didn't talk a lot about, didn't tell a lot of stories about. And she would say something about my mother or father, and I remember having the thought, I didn't really tell you anything. I didn't tell you a story that would have showed you that about my mother or my father. And I would think, it's not. I don't know if it's quite true. It doesn't feel like it fits. It doesn't feel completely untrue, but it just doesn't land and stick with me. And what I realize now, what is absolutely clear to me now, is that she was right over and over and over again. And that what she saw in me was the evidence or the outcome of the behavior that she was describing, the kind of parenting that she was describing in my parents. And that took a lot of years for me to discover and to see. And now it's so obvious to me. I can see the same thing in other people. I can watch somebody, meet somebody, see how they show up, and I start to have a sense pretty quickly about what it was like for them growing up and who they were supposed to be. We lose contact with this part of ourselves because to fit in, to be accepted, to feel safe, and to experience necessary belonging, even for survival, it was required of us to dampen or lose that voice, that part of ourself. The voices in your head that cause you to lose clarity about what you want, need, and feel, and the choices that come from those places. So that's why I talk about when people say, what should I do? My response is essentially, I don't even know what the word should means, really. I really don't in the context of that kind of a question. It doesn't make sense to me to ask it of myself or of anybody else. So when somebody asks me, as a therapist, as a parent coach, what should I do? What I try to redirect and say, let's first discover your truth, your story. What do you want? What do you feel? What are your priorities? What do you value? What's your goal? Right? Finding the authentic self is the foundation for then discovering what you want to do next and how you want to show up. And then we can talk about some strategies based on that fundamental truth, that some of which is lost long ago in childhood, right? We don't know. I think I've told you the story about a client that I had who only allowed himself to set clear and healthy boundaries twice in his life, two times in his life. And those two times were around the death of his two parents. Those are the only times that he felt like he had permission from the universe, that nobody was going to call him selfish if he said no to something or didn't extend himself to some project. Isn't that remarkable? Two times in his life that he felt validated enough, that he felt justified in following his heart. The critical inner voice that tells you are broken, wrong, selfish, bad, should feel guilty and ashamed is evidence of the forces that lead to the loss of the inner child, the authentic self. Again, it's frightening for us to imagine, consider letting go of some of those messages. I do inner child work with a whole host of people at our intensives. I do it with my clients sometimes too. I do it with the kids in the field sometimes. And people are terrified to let go of their shame. Because why would I do anything? Why would I do anything right if not for shame or guilt? And so far in my life, shame and guilt has helped me. And in many ways, it helped me to survive. If I didn't get rid of those parts of myself that were upsetting or threatening or anxiety producing to my family, to my friends, to teachers, if I didn't get rid of those things, bury them, I might have been left on my own. People might have abandoned me. So for you to suggest that I consider taking back some parts of myself is absolutely terrifying. So a lot of times I spend time trying to just honor the voice that shows up subtly in sessions, in workshops and in retreats. Because if somebody can respond to those parts differently than had occurred in the past, then it can be healed. A client said to me one time when I was asking him about some insecurity that he was having in social situations. I said, "Do you ever feel that way with me?" And he said, without thinking, he just said, "Oh no, I never feel that way with you because I can't do this wrong." And I was so happy. I was so happy that he believed that he couldn't do therapy wrong. I felt like I had accomplished some small thing. So you learn to reconnect to yourself. And sometimes even the people in your environment currently aren't always supportive of that. It's inconvenient for them. There are new boundaries. What's the impact of reconnecting to your inner child, to those core pieces of yourself that are lost? Well, you have more compassion and more capacity to hold others. You know, it's like I said, the parallel between parenting your inner child and parenting your literal child is a powerful connection. You're better able to hear your children, to hear the important things that they're saying, and thus provide healthier, stronger, more secure attachment to them. You're better able to create intimacy in courtship and in coupleship and partnership and marriage because it's your true self. And intimacy, by definition, is the connection of two selves. So the more of a self you are, the more whole and integrated you are, the more capacity you have for intimacy. You're more honest and less controlling. You show up and you let go of trying to control the other people. You're kinder, more generous, more courageous, and more giving. It's really, morally speaking, your highest self. you're less subjected, less subject to your defenses and your mental illness issues. They are not driving the ship. So when I leaned into my shame, as suggested by my therapist, I didn't become more obnoxious. I became less obnoxious. I didn't become more subject to the whims of my feelings of insecurity. I became less so. You can name them. You can talk about them. And now, sometimes when I'm in a situation where I feel socially anxious, and it happens all the time to me, I can just talk about it. Talk about it with somebody next to me. Go through an inner dialogue for myself and just recognize it and be gentle with myself. How do you do this? How do you make the shift from the way that we were raised, what we've done to our inner child, and integrating? I wanted to say this because I don't know that I've said this as clearly as I could. This is really important to me for you all to hear on the broadcast. 95% of what I talk about and teach, 95% of it is from being a client in therapy, not from my education. Almost everything that I have to offer of value comes from my own work. That's why, for those of you who find something that I have to say helpful or even a little bit different than what you've heard before, it's because it's coming from that place. It's not coming from the books that I've read and the studies that I've researched and read about. It doesn't come from my professors. It comes from sitting in a room with a therapist for 20 years and several years before that with other therapists and taking the risk to show up and having her respond to me differently than anybody had in my entire life. And as a result of that process, coming to know myself better, and that gave me insight into everybody else. Once I could see myself better, I could see everybody else too. Because all of our underbellies, while there are unique wrinkles to our stories, to all of our stories, in some ways all of our stories are different, but at a core deep level, all of our stories are the same too. And when I sit in retreats with individuals, with families, with professional groups of professionals, it's almost all the same stuff. Like the songwriter I talked to recently who said, he's written about 300 songs or so, and he said, I've only written one song. I just wrote it over and over and over again. Great storytellers, they tell the same story over and over again. That's what the hero's journey is about. It's telling the same story over and over again, although the context and the characters change and the small brushstrokes change, it's the same story. So I wanted you to know that. If you've been curious about why I might have a few different things to say than sometimes some of the things you hear. We go to therapy and we sit in groups. That's how you do it. You find an adequate therapist, which is my highest compliment to a therapist. An adequate therapist who can contain you means that they can tolerate you, which is the best thing to have happen. I was talking about adequate therapists and being tolerated recently in a group with men, and one of the men said to me, that seems like such a low bar. I want to be more than tolerated. And I said, but to be really tolerated in the way that I mean clinically, in clinical terms, means that I'm okay. And there's nothing better than that. That's better than being admired. That's better than impressing somebody. Because, and I've watched this over and over and over again in group settings where somebody is giving somebody feedback and complimenting the person. And I can see it on their face, and when I bring it up, they acknowledge it, that it doesn't quite land, because I know no matter how great, no matter how talented, no matter how wonderful is something about me is or something I do is, that there's the other side of me, the side that I haven't shown. And so when you compliment my amazing traits, my wonderful traits, I just look at the weak parts of myself, the parts of myself that I have a hard time making peace with, that I'm afraid that if I showed to you, you wouldn't accept me. So to be tolerated is everything. It's everything. If there's something I could say to you all tonight about tolerating people, I don't know if this is quite a perfect way to describe it, but it's close. I try to develop a practice with the people around me where I don't have an opinion about them. I don't have a judgment about the rightness or the wrongness of the thing that they're doing in their life. It's not that I can't have boundaries, not that I won't separate myself from toxic or unkind people. But I try to have very little opinion of somebody, to hold other people lightly. Because it's in that context, in that kind of space, where somebody feels safe. And so I'm really, really sensitive. I can feel it really, really easily that people have lots of opinions about me. I'm not talking about professionally. That happens too. But I'm just talking about socially. I can feel people suggesting to me that I be a certain way, a different way. Sometimes it's overt advice or opinions, but sometimes it's just an energy. And I like to be around people who don't have an expert opinion about my life. I like to be around people who don't think they know my truth, who don't think they know what I should do. Those are my people. Intensives. One of the reasons why I like to participate in intensives as a participant and also run them is because you can really immerse yourself in some of this in ways that you can't in a 1-hour session once a week. That's why we run what we run, because you get in there with a handful of other people and you really dig into this. And you get as much out of watching somebody else's work. I think one of the most misunderstood aspects of the intensive is that people tell me over and over again, I've seen it for years now. They say, I get just as much out of somebody else's work as I do out of my own. So you not only immerse yourself into your own work, your own history, but you watch other people do it and you start to make sense of things. You start to make connections. Inner child exercises, guided meditations, letter writing to your inner child, things like that. Those can be all be exercises that over time help to reveal what was lost, what is lost. A picture of myself. In fact, I have a picture of myself as a younger child just over there, just off my desk that I pulled out after I did my first inner child piece of work many years ago. And I put it on the table, the desk that I worked at, and I've kept it there ever since. And so when I'm sitting on the phone or kicking back at my desk, I'll often just glance over there and I'll remember what it felt like to be me, what it felt like to be scared, to not fit in, to not know if I had anything to value, to wonder if I was okay. I'll tell you something about this in a recent inner child experience that I had. I recently got a dog. We've had her for about 9 months. She's a Rhodesian Ridgeback. Very strong, beautiful dog. And I realized something about 2 weeks ago, and it came up in my recent work. I realized that I sleep better. She sleeps in our bed with us, my wife and I. And so Ruby sleeps with us. And I sleep better when she's there. And it's because she's a really strong dog and she's really sensitive. She's a fantastic guard dog. And I'm a large person. I live in a safe neighborhood. It's not a very threatening, scary place to live. But I realized the little boy inside of me growing up was always scared. I grew up with a single mom who was scared herself. And so I was scared. And it was hard to see or admit that. And when I told my wife, I got emotional. And when I did an inner child exercise recently, I got very emotional about that. And practice thanking Ruby for what she does. She stretches her body out lengthwise along either myself or my wife while we sleep. And if there's ever any sound, she would bark. And even though she's probably afraid of the sound, her bark sounds intimidating. Like a lot of us, right? It's really just fear, but the bark sounds really intimidating. And that was hard to say at first. I was embarrassed. I was embarrassed to be afraid as a grown man. I was embarrassed to own that part of my history, my childhood. And I was embarrassed that at the age of 51 years old, that a 85-pound dog sleeping in my bed helped me sleep better. But it's true. And The wonderful thing is, when I told that story at my recent retreat that I went to, all the men around me just loved me, were kind to me, were welcoming of that little boy who expressed himself, and nobody told me I was being irrational or ridiculous. Those are the messages we tell little children when they show up in ways that confuse us or make us uncomfortable. We let go of relationships in our lives where the people in our lives, where those people try to make us something we're not, to make us be right or good instead of real or honest. We give people back. We reject people's anxiety, opinions, and judgments about us and give it back to them. That's what we do. But it takes a long time, folks. Psychoeducation can help. It's definitely helped give me language and conceptualize what I'm describing to you tonight. But the real gold, the real stuff that has made the difference in my life, and it's not even close, the real stuff is sitting in a therapist's office in the role of a client for 20 plus years. So, what are the take homes? This is a key to helping yourself and your child. I know it doesn't sell well. I know that it doesn't sell well because you're not struggling overtly as much as your child is. But I will tell you, it makes the biggest difference. And I've been doing this work for a long time, and I'm more aware now. The intensive that I just went to myself last week was one of my best ever. And that's after a decade of talking and teaching about intensives and running intensives. So I know it doesn't sell well, but it's the truth. One of the most important things, you're all spending a lot of time and a lot of money, a lot of energy, a lot of your resources supporting your child. And that's fantastic. It benefits them and they need it. And it will help them in their life. I still draw upon some of those lessons that happened to me when my mother sent me to a treatment program when I was 16. I still remember some of those things. And when I was ready, all of those things that had lied dormant for years came completely alive in me. So it's valuable. Having said that, I don't know if there's anything more valuable that you can do than to do your own work. It makes the biggest difference. It helps to support and maintain. It gives you peace and serenity and clarity and confidence. It helps you find your authentic self more and more and more. And all of that is a much, much more optimal context for a child to grow up in and around. Somebody told me recently that many parents would do anything to avoid looking at themselves. I don't think that's true of the people that listen to these podcasts or watch these webinars. You wouldn't be here. But I implore and beg you to give it a try and watch it change your life. And it takes a while. It takes a good deal of practice and work to hear your inner child. Even when I see clients or peers sometimes kind of expose their inner child, their story, and then I hear them respond to it. Sometimes we do it in a role play that we call psychodrama. When they respond to their inner child, they dismiss him or her. They erase him or her. They shame him or her. And they don't know that they're doing it. They just don't know how to hold scared, insecure, hurt, sad children. They say things like, "I hate talking about this. I'm getting tired of talking about this, or getting sick of myself saying this, or I feel like I'm complaining," right? Those are the voices that they carry around in their head that try to shut the inner child up, the authentic self up. Let go of your shame and guilt and the gift that they've given you in your life. Recognize that shame has helped you. Guilt has helped you. It's allowed you to survive. And part of honoring the inner child is to honor that. To say to the little child, the anxious, the depressed child inside of you, "I'm here for you." Think about it inside of you like you would a little struggling child. And tell them that you're there for them. And you can even thank your symptoms because they protected you from more and more hurt and trauma. It takes a risk. This is risky business. It's hard to trust a new voice to guide you. It feels bad, shameful, guilty, and scary. But it's worth it. So I hope you get to find somebody, an adequate person in your life that can tolerate you, that can hear you, can listen without the need, the impulse to correct, to judge, or to fix you. All right, send in your questions now if you have any. I'm going to go through upcoming events and slides, and then I'll go back to the questions. We would ask all parents to go to 6 12-step support groups, any combination of Al-Anon, Codependence Anonymous, Families Anonymous, Alateen is for teenagers. There's also adultchildren.org that you can go to for adult children of alcoholics. It doesn't mean your parents had to be alcoholics, but think of alcoholism as a certain kind of family that a lot of us could actually relate to. RefugeRecovery.org is a place you can go to find out about support groups in your area that don't focus as much on a higher power and have a more Buddhist philosophy. NAMI.org is a place you can go to get information, classes, resources in your area locally that are affordable or free. All of these broadcasts are available on the podcast apps. It took us about 2 years to get to 250,000 listens, and we're on pace to have another 250,000 listens this year. So by the end of the year, we'll be about 500,000 listens. So continue to rate, love, share them. We love that this is spreading out all over the world. So they're available on your podcast app on your iPhone. On your Android device, you can download the SoundCloud app on your Android device and search either one of those, search Evoke Therapy Programs. You can also go to soundcloud.com and search Evoke Therapy Programs there. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Our main program Instagram page is at Evoke Therapy, and our Summit Lodge, our new Summit Lodge Instagram is at Summit Lodge. On Facebook, you can find us by searching Evoke Therapy Programs. You can find the Alumni Foundation on Facebook by searching Evoke Family Foundation. This is a group of alumni parents who have gathered together to give back and to help people that can't afford treatment. The Evoke Therapy blog is a wonderful place for new content each week. My book, The Journey of the Heroic Parent, my first book, is available on Amazon right now. That's being the warehouse is being, they're publishing a new edition of it. So you can go right under the paperback and click under the new, and that you can buy it directly from Evoke Therapy Programs on Amazon. Also, electronic versions are available on Amazon, as are audio versions. If you want to do some intensives, I think we have one spot in April left coming up. April 10th through 14th, May 15th through 19th is the next one. We have a Finding You 2. If you've been to a Finding You, I've done one of these already. I absolutely love them. Finding You 2 was a blast to do. So I'll be running the Finding You 2 this summer. Contact intensives at evoketherapy.com for more information, for scheduling, for signing up. I'll be in Philadelphia on Monday, April 8th, this Monday, April 8th. I have a 10:30 to noon question and answer small group meeting. And then in the evening, I have a larger talk. So contact Melanie at evoketherapy.com for more information or to RSVP. We're going to be in London the week of April 27th to May 3rd. We would like to do a parent group there that week. This will be not just for alumni, but for family and friends of alumni. You can bring your friends. I'll be in New York Monday, May 13th, 7 to 9 p.m., and in Toronto, Wednesday, May 22nd. We will ask all current parents, if possible, to go to one of our workshops. The next one is in Oregon, April 13th and 14th. Following, it'll be in May 18th in St. George, Utah, May 18th and 19th. Contact Melanie at evoketherapy.com. Our pursuit trips, you can go to our website and learn about those. Those are adventure trips all over the world for young adults or families. Think therapy, light, sober, fun, reconnecting to your skills and tools. All right, a couple of questions have come in. Thank you for being so open about your inner child work. It's invaluable to hear. I did recently an inner child exercise per book, and it was afraid to start. It was scary and painful, and I'm glad I started. It's still scary. Are there any book resources you can recommend? That's a good question. First of all, The Drama of the Gifted Child is the book I'm always going to recommend. But John Bradshaw has written about this. And the one that people talk about all the time, where a lot of, I haven't read it in a long, long time, but Homecoming. And I think he has a couple of others. But Homecoming is the book that really made some of this work more popular. John Bradshaw's Homecoming. But look at a couple, Google his name or go to Amazon and look at John Bradshaw and see if any of the other titles strike you. Another parent writes, thank you for this topic and being vulnerable. I keep forgetting my inner child and my therapist feels I need more intensive work, considering what is next and the journey of healing. Well, thank you guys for sharing. Thank you for showing up for and on behalf of your children. Thank you for being willing to do this. It can make a difference in your life and it can make a difference in your child's life if you do this work and if you lean into it and if you take the heroic step, which is to look inside of yourself. That's really what the hero's journey is. It's a look inside of oneself. All right, my next broadcast will be Thursday, April 11th. That's next Thursday. Thursday, April 11th at 7 p.m. Mountain Time, I'll be talking about letter writing and phone calls. Phone calls to the fields and letter writing in the program. Thanks for joining me this evening. I hope this is a helpful point of contact for all of you. Take care, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye. Bye.